Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Good afternoon, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I am Jim Behnke, and this is the June 12th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, space education and getting kids excited about space is going to be our main focus for today. Plus, we're going to have some comments based on the space news of the past week and your comments as well. And you are invited, as always, to join in the conversation at any time with your questions or comments. We remind you again, the number to reach us right now in the studio is 321-768-1240 from anywhere in the nation. While local AT&T wireless customers right here on the Space Coast can dial *1240, and it's a free phone call. And if you're listening to us from anywhere in the world at WMMBAM.com, online streaming audio, and you'd prefer to send us an email, the address is spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, in this first segment, let's clean up some news here and talk about some things going on around the Cape this week. First of all, my email was, I don't want to say deluged, but I got more email this past week at spacetalking@AOL.com on the topic of last week's SpaceX launch, and not only in terms of what it means for the space program, but a lot of talk about the coverage of the launch, not only how we did in terms of bringing it to you live on the air here at WMMB, some of my comments about it the next day, but a lot of comments about what SpaceX provided to the nation and putting its best foot forward as at least as the way the nation and certainly the Space Coast observed it as its inaugural launch. It certainly was the inaugural launch of the Falcon 9. They've done some Falcon 1 launches before, and we've gotten an idea of their media plan and how they do that. But the bottom line of all of the emails was negative. All of the emails, whether you didn't like what I did or whether you didn't like what SpaceX did, it clearly was one of these situations where the best setup is not there yet. And, of course, we need to talk to SpaceX. The media world does, and we'll continue to do that. The way we do launches with other rockets, with the Deltas, the Atlases, with other companies, with NASA, is a completely different setup. And the way SpaceX did it just exasperated all the weaknesses in the system for everybody. And there were basically no news media, whether you saw it live or not, whether you had a camera on the causeway or not, was pleased with the way it worked out. And that made us all look bad. It made us look bad. It made me look bad. It made I think, SpaceX not look as good as it should have because, again, it has such a stellar success. So let's put our best foot forward moving on, and let's figure out how to patch this up and make it work. And again, I thank you for all of the email comments that we got. And I do want to mention one comment in particular from Richard, who said after ranting about the coverage and all that, recommend keeping Behnke off of the airwaves, especially with his adolescent voice quality. And Richard, I'd just like to thank you because it made me feel young this week, and I needed that as my baby goes off to college in the next few weeks. So let's see, what else is going on? On Tuesday, Kennedy Space Center Director Bob Cabana spoke at the National Space Club Florida Committee, the monthly luncheon, and so he got up there, gave everyone an update, and said basically what we thought was going to happen is going to happen for the next few shuttle missions that are remaining. Shuttle Discovery now on the range for September 16th. Is now very likely going to move to October. No specific target date yet in mind, but a move anyway to the next month. And then the Endeavour mission that had been set for flying in November and was very likely going to be the last shuttle mission ever now will move to next year sometime. The primary payload for Endeavour, at least the one of the significant goals for that mission, is to carry a science experiment up a device called the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer. This is a really important piece of hardware to have and to be able to put up at the International Space Station. It is not ready yet to fly. They're going through some last-minute looks and issues and tests and whatnot. It was supposed to have been delivered here by July, and that's not going to happen. And because of that, it automatically is delaying the Endeavour flight into next year. Again, no specific words on what month, whether it's a January or February time frame. There are some other activities going on the space station in terms of progress vehicles coming and going. Those are the small Russian cargo craft. Crew exchange is always an issue. The time of year in terms of the sun angle and when the shuttle can be docked to the space station and not docked to the station based on where the sun is, and that's a temperature problem. All of those factors are known and will be rolled into the schedule, and they'll figure out a time. You know, again, early next year now, looking for an Endeavour's mission. And again, as of now, that remains the last flight for the space shuttle program. So we have two more to go. Discovery flying its last flight, and then Endeavour flying its last flight. The open question that Mr. Cabana couldn't answer with any certainty is what's going to happen with Atlantis. Atlantis will be prepared to serve as an emergency launch vehicle for the Endeavour mission. So if Endeavour launches and has any issues, Atlantis can be quickly rolled out to the pad and be launched. That means there's a full external tank, set of solid rocket boosters, and a crew to support that mission. And if that is not needed, then you've got this thing basically ready to fly. It just needed to be, you know, quote-unquote, gassed up and go. And there's a great sentiment to go ahead and figure out a way to fly that Atlantis mission one more time. They could use the supplies on board the space station. They could use anything to take advantage of the shuttle's giant cargo bay one last time to bring cargo up. And the idea would be that Atlantis would launch to the space station with a four-man crew so that if anything went wrong with Atlantis and they couldn't come back, there's a smaller crew that could use the Soyuz rescue vehicles, the Soyuz spacecraft that are already docked to the space station, and come back in those. And you'd probably have to have an extra Soyuz ready to fly up anyway. And so to deal with those kind of issues, you know, to make it all possible would be something that they have to work through to make happen. So, again, you know, the bottom line is that we still only have two more flights to go. Discovery now looking in October, Endeavour following the new year, and then whether or not Atlantis flies again. And if it did, I've heard dates that range from, you know, April to all the way into the summer before that would happen. So we'll wait and see. It's interesting to note that next April will be the 30th anniversary of the first space shuttle flight, and there's going to be some celebrations and whatnot for that. So we'll just have to wait and see how that that plays out. By the way, yesterday and starting yesterday and continuing for some time to come now, out at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, my favorite topic besides football and space is Star Trek, and there's a new Star Trek show out at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. We talked a little bit about it before, but again, I just want to make sure that you're aware of it because it's an opportunity to go out and learn a little bit about science and learn a little bit about space flight and how that all works together under the fictional guise of Star Trek. There's a show, there's actors, there's opportunities for people from the state, from the audience to come up on the stage. And it's a great little opportunity to have a little bit of fun. And if you're a Star Trek fan and of any sort, from any era, original series on down to Enterprise, I encourage you to get out to the visitor complex this summer and take advantage of that show. And you'll have a great time. Well, look, when we return, we're going to be joined by Hortense Burt from the Kennedy Space Center to talk about space education and NASA's contribution to the Summer of Innovation program. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB. We'll be right back.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And indeed, welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to join me today with your questions or comments. Once again, you can send us email at any time to spacetalking@AOL.com. The screen is up right in front of me here. If your mail pops in, we'll try to get to it as soon as we can. Well, let's talk about space education for a minute, shall we? It was in May of 1961 that President Kennedy challenged this nation to go to the moon, you know, and do it within a decade. And when he did that, much of the technology needed to accomplish the task hadn't even been invented yet. There were no procedures written down, no operations manuals written yet. In fact, the only experience we even had with humans in space was Alan Shepard's 15-minute little suborbital hop that had happened just a couple of weeks before the president made that address to Congress. The NASA administrator at the time was a man named James Webb, and he wasn't an engineer or an expert in science of any kind, but he knew politics. He knew how to organize things. He was a businessman. He knew what needed to be done to get the job done, and was a very strong-willed man and didn't let anything get in his way, you know, of fulfilling the president's mandate at the time. Now, in order to accomplish the goals of Apollo, and all of this is just a little historical lesson here, to accomplish the goals of Apollo, you know, Webb knew that this nation needed more engineers, it needed more scientists, it needed more technicians, you know, than what the nation was producing at the time. There just wasn't the emphasis on science and engineering and technology, and so to deal with that, he put in a number of initiatives run by NASA that eventually made education, you know, with a capital E, one of NASA's highest priorities. And that effort has continued today all the way through the history of the program, through the history of the agency, and truly has never been more important than ever before, because I believe we find ourselves in the exact same position now as we did as a nation back during Apollo. We're just not graduating enough engineers. We're not exciting kids to follow careers in the science and technology areas. And so the work that the NASA education folks are doing in cooperation with so many other people is just absolutely key, fundamental to the success of the future of the space program. People ask, why do we spend so much money, you know, at NASA on education, you know, just to get kids excited, and it's planting seeds. It's all about planting seeds for the future so these kids can grow up, graduate, and come help us solve the problems of spaceflight as we move forward. Well, that said, each of NASA's field centers does have a dedicated division toward education initiatives, and certainly at the Kennedy Space Center here is no exception. So, by way of introduction, to help us learn about all of this, we welcome to the phones NASA's Acting Chief of the Education Programs and University Research Division at the Kennedy Space Center, Hortense Burt. And Hortense, welcome to Space Talk.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, it's good to have you. So let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about you. You know, we talk about astronauts, we talk about managers, you know, the Bob Cabanas and all that of the world. But Hortense, you're out there running the education operation out there. Tell us a little bit about you and how you got into all this and what's your interest in space.
Okay, well, first of all, Jim, I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and I was a strong cowboy fan, didn't know much about space, to be honest, wasn't so much interested in working for NASA or the space industry. But I always loved math because it was a subject where when my answer was incorrect, I knew it was incorrect, and if I kept working with it, I could figure out what was wrong with it and how to get it right by learning the formulas and redoing it. So I've always loved math. I was interested in biology.
Yeah.
Thought I wanted to be a teacher, and as I got ready to graduate, someone said, hey, why don't you go to school and major in engineering? And to be honest, Jim, at the time, I was like, engineering? What's that? I don't think I want to do that.
Right, right.
But I took the advice, and I did that, and got my career started with the government and had an opportunity to come work for NASA as a mission assurance manager in our launch services program. And I think NASA is absolutely one of the best places to work, and I am extremely excited about what I do in the education office, because at one time I thought I wanted to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. So now having the engineering degree and then turning back around and using that to work for NASA in the education arena is outstanding for me.
Well, and I know you to be a great communicator and getting very excited around kids and what's going on. And that's rare to have that education of being an engineer and being able to translate that into the kind of language that kids can get excited about. And that's got to be a tough challenge, I would think.
Well, it is tough challenge, because now, unlike when I was growing up, kids are pretty headstrong. You know, living here with my own kids, and I'm suggesting that they seek a STEM field of study, STEM standing for science, technology, engineering, and math.
Right.
They have their own ideas of what they want to do, so it's hard to convince them that this is a great opportunity for you, and it's not going to take away anything that you think you want to do in life. You know, I hear students tell me, well, I want to be a designer. Well, imagine being a designer with an engineering degree.
Right. Can you imagine what you could do with it?
So that's the hard part, is trying to expose young people to this is fun and it is exciting. And NASA has all the tools to do that.
Well, and I know getting kids excited about engineering is tough, you know, because, you know, I went to Embry-Riddle, and all I knew is that my engineering friends had no social life. Because they were so busy.
Yeah, that's definitely true in college. I can tell you I didn't have much of a social life, but hopefully that won't go beyond 5 years.
That's right. And then you're making more money than anybody else is, and now you're the most popular person. So, well, and so you took all that. You wound up here at Kennedy Space Center. And by the way, in your first sentence, you mentioned you're a Cowboy fan. You're talking to a Minnesota Viking fan. And we could wind up, you know, this year in the NFC Championship, deciding who's going to go to Dallas to play in the Super Bowl. So you and I need to stay in touch here this fall and see what's going on.
But, all right.
So what's going on at KSC now? You know, let's talk about what does your division do? Kind of give us the layout of what you're up to.
Well, basically, Jim, at Kennedy, education is broke up into three areas. One area is what we call agency area, which is where Kennedy is responsible for running programs that go across all 10 centers. It is ran at each agency, but Kennedy holds the project manager for those programs.
Mm-hmm.
One such program is the INSPIRE program, which is the only NASA program that is for high school students. And it has three tiers to it. The first tier is where students will have an online opportunity to talk with astronauts, scientists, and engineers. And then when they move from that tier to the next tier, which is where they get a two-week campus life experiment, it's like, okay, we've exposed you to what engineering is. Now let's put you at a university and see, so you can see what the classes are like.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, they get an opportunity to come and work at NASA as an intern. And these students are usually seniors in high school or in between graduating high school and going into college. And it's an excellent pipeline program. And again, it is ran at all 10 centers. Right now at Kennedy, we have 6 kids in the program, and they come from everywhere. We actually have 2 from right here in Brevard County, but the other 6 are from nationwide.
Hmm. So that deals with students then. So that's with
yes.
kids.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me some more about what you do. And you're after teachers as well, teaching teachers.
Right. In the K-12 side of the House of Education, we put on many workshops for teachers. We also do in-service teacher days, where we will go to the school and have hundreds of teachers that we are putting on robotic workshops or planetarium workshops, whatever the the teachers or the school would like for us to help the teachers to be able to teach that deals with what NASA does, we will go and we will put workshops on for those teachers so that they will be better in the classroom in delivering those types of subjects to students. Mm.
Now, I would imagine that, of course, the Internet has changed everything in terms of the way you deliver and the way you interact with teachers. I remember growing up in Minnesota, you know, I had any time I had an education query to NASA, it went to what was then called the Lewis Research Center, and it's now Glenn, because each center was divided up into regions. You know, now I would imagine that you can, you know, this stuff just can go out to everyone and everywhere. And is that the best way for teachers to plug into what you're doing? You've got about 30 seconds.
Yes, they can go to NASA.gov and go to education, and it's broken up into whether you're a K through 12 teacher or a university faculty person, and you can follow the links to the opportunities and the services that NASA provides in those areas for teachers. The web has really helped us and opened up an opportunity not just for local teachers in a local community where NASA is, but where NASA does not exist.
That's great. Well, Hortez, look, it's time to take a quick 5-minute built-in hold. It'll give us time to catch up on what's happening with news, weather, and sports. And when we return, we'll talk more about NASA's education program at KSC, and plus your questions and comments along the way. So this is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
And welcome back to the second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, the numbers are 321-768-1240 to dial in if you have a question or comment about space education or anything else having to do with the space program. Star 1240 for local AT&T wireless customers. If you are online or next to a computer and wish to interact that way, you can send us email via spacetalking@AOL.com. That's spacetalking@AOL.com. You can follow us on Twitter throughout the week, by the way, Space Talking, the username. So just follow Space Talking. You can sign up with us that way. And, of course, we refer you to our website, WMMBAM.com, for all things having to do with the streaming audio of the show. A podcast recording of the show will be available all week. You enter keywords Space Talk, and you can go to our Space Talk webpage and get updates and links to things like books that we've mentioned before and help with space education. In fact, we still have a page up there dealing with model rocketry that you may find helpful. And, of course, at that website right now, there's also talk about a cruise that WMMB is sponsoring in November, which we'll have the pleasure of joining you on as well. So you can look for all of that on WMMBAM.com. Well, back to the subject of space education with Hortense Burt, who runs the education operations out at the Kennedy Space Center. Hortense, welcome back. Well, you're still there. Good, good. Didn't want to make sure you were running off to check up on the cowboy status. That's good. Well, let's – in your title, it has to do with university research, and I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, Kennedy Space Center, of course, is known traditionally, culturally, historically as an operations center, and we don't tend to do a lot of research here as opposed to some of the other centers. But that isn't to say that you aren't still involved in some research, and the future looks kind of bright for that as well. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, the future is definitely looking good for research, and when you speak of NASA in general, with the new direction that we'll be taking, we will definitely, I'm assuming, get more research at Kennedy. And even though right now, as you stated, Kennedy is known basically as the launch and landing operations, and we'll forever be known as that, and we'll continue to do that no matter what we're launching. University research side of the house. In education, we have these university research projects where we give grant money to minority-serving universities to do research that is related to what NASA is doing. So even though right at Kennedy we may not be doing a whole lot of research education is definitely investing in research at all levels for students to get involved in NASA's research. And some of that research with the new restructure of where the agency is going may just end up at Kennedy.
Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of land out there and facilities that could be built, and there's the research park. And I know Kennedy Space Center is working very closely with Space Florida and the rest of the state of Florida to make more and more of that happen here. And there's no reason why we can't take advantage of the expertise. You know, my vision, Hortense, has always been that, you know, get kids excited about space here in Florida, have them go to school here in Florida, graduate here from Florida, and then get employed here in Florida working on the space program, whether it's on the Space Coast or somewhere else in the state. But the point is that, you know, you get that whole pipeline going, and that's, I think that's just an absolute key to our success in our future endeavors. So speaking of some of that kind of stuff and getting kids involved, I wanted to touch on a couple of specific programs that were getting a lot of buzz. And first of all, you had a robotics competition going on?
Yes, we had a lunobotics competition the end of May, from the 28th to around the 30th of May. And basically we had 22 schools, again, from all over the country to participate in that competition. It was exciting, and it was a great time. It gave students an opportunity to work on some real-world challenges that NASA has, as well as to get involved with robotics. The students were tagged to design a lunobotic that would scoop up the winner had to scoop up a minimum of 10 kilograms of BP simulant. And so they all had these different challenges, and, of course, the robots come in, and they're all looking different, and they had to run the robots remotely. So it was a great fun, and I believe right here in our own backyard, Emory River won first place for the outreach section of the competition.
Well, and you're very kind to mention that, because I'm too humble to mention it otherwise as alumni. But, and you know, these competitions are great, and the lunobotics, and you've had some other robotics things going on.
Right.
These competitions are intense, and when you're in the room watching this stuff happen, I mean, you think, you know, we're watching soccer going on right now in the World Cup, and you think those fans are crazy. These guys are just, I mean, they get in their uniforms, and they got their robots decorated, and there's cheering, and there's intensity. You know, when they're trying to dig something out and they just miss it, or they got to go back again. I mean, it is something to behold, and I wish more people could be exposed to it. And whenever these things run on NASA TV, you know, I just encourage you to encourage you to watch it. You know, one of the other programs that's a big deal now, and of course this was something that President Obama had mentioned, and NASA is contributing, and I guess as it just started now, is the Summer of Innovation.
Yes.
That's a big effort that you guys are involved with. Talk about that.
Yes, that's a huge effort. But before I go to that, as you stated with lunobotics and trying to get students involved, what we did there is we brought local K-12 students out so they could get excited about this as well. And with them sitting there seeing the university students all excited, and we had so many kids walk away, students who normally would not even think about engineering are now going, wow, I need to go figure out what this engineering is. I want to do that. If I can do this, I definitely want to look at engineering. But on to some of innovation. It is huge at NASA. It is NASA's answer to the president's challenge to the Summer of Innovation. And we are going out under our new administrator, General Charlie Bolden. He's charged each center to touch 1,000 kids this summer, and I don't mean just touch them and do something really tiny. We have to do a minimum of a 40-hour STEM content program with them, and then we're going to introduce them to at least, of those 40 hours, at least 8 of those hours have to be some of innovation content. So at Kennedy, we're well on our way to getting those students. We have a targeted group of students. They underserved, underrepresented population from grades 5th through 9th. Mm-hmm. What Kennedy has is we have a week opportunity at KSC Summer Camp, which is ran by Delaware North Park. We've bought some spots there, and we know it's an excellent program that Delaware North has put on for many years. So we are buying spots for that particular program. And if anyone out there is listening and your child or your student that you know is between fifth and ninth grade, meaning they're going to be rising fifth graders up to rising ninth graders, and they're in the underserved, underrepresented population in science, technology, engineering, and math, please, I have a number I can give you to get more information.
Yeah, do that.
I'm sorry, I was going to give that number.
Yeah.
That number is 867-8777. And leave us your name, your number, and we will definitely get back with you.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And, you know, the camp program is wonderful. And is this the one where you get to – does it involve the overnight stuff?
No, this does not involve
the
what
day
you're
camp
talking about. You're right, Jim. That is Sleep Under the Saturn V rocket, and you are absolutely right. That is an excellent program. NASA hosted last year over 100 kids into that program. And, again, the kids as well as their parents walk away from that, and they are just excited about STEM education after that. It's like, okay, if we can do this, then, yeah, we're glad we came, and we want to help our kids get into a STEM field of study. But I had a couple of parents say, hey, I'm going back to school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that overnight under the Saturn rocket is outstanding.
So the camp program is the day camp where they come in and basically spend the day, and they get to do – they see the exhibits, right. The tours, they play with some of the astronaut training equipment.
Right, and what we have, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Astronaut Hall of Fame, where
right.
we have all the simulators over there. So they get to get on some of those simulators. We have science on a sphere over there. So they're going to get indulged and engaged in a lot of hands-on science type of things that will let them know that it's not boring. This can be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. And to get kids inspired is so important. I just keep saying it over and over again. You know, and we'll just wrap up with this quick story for you, Hortense. When I was growing up in Minnesota, before we had the internet, before we had, you know, all this stuff going on available to us, you know, I was one of those kids that would write every year to NASA, and you wait for the mail to come because you'd get that giant manila envelope. A lot of times with a very cool rubber band around it, which you could use to, you know, deal with insects later. But you could open up that envelope, and it was filled with brochures of all sorts. Talking about all the different programs, and you would just absorb that information, and that would get you excited and dreaming about what you can go do and where you might go and all that. And what you're doing out there today is the exact same thing in a 21st century world, getting kids excited with all these great programs, all the stuff going on online as well. And as we're wrapping up here, Hortense, with you, just thanks for what you're doing, and continued best wishes and good luck to you and your team.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, that's great. Hortense, we'll see you again sometime soon. We'll say goodbye to her. We have one more segment to go when we return. Let's see, something different for sure. A little announcement about next week. We might even call this the Dawn segment coming up here in just a couple of minutes. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
Well, welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance, as always. With about another 8 minutes to go, it's certainly not too late for you to call in if you have any questions or comments about anything having to do with the space program that you want to discuss, ask a question, and get into. We have some time to do that, but in the meantime, invite you to consider a couple of things. Let's call this the Dawn segment of Space Talk today. Couple of weird things happened this week, and I wanted to share them with you, which are very interesting. There was a little story in the news today, or this past week, that I read and I thought was interesting, and I didn't think much of it, and just kind of read it and passed it away, and then my trusty engineer Aaron Michaels, who runs this spaceship here at Space Talk, forwarded me the email, and I thought, well, this is, if Aaron's interested in this, then there's got to be other people that are going to think this is cool, and it certainly is, and here's the deal. Dawn is a NASA spacecraft that was launched from the Cape on a Delta II in September of 2007, and it is essentially an asteroid flyby mission. It's It's off on a long journey through the solar system. It has passed, I think it's passed by Mars or is going to soon. I'm not sure exactly when it is. But it's heading to Vesta is the main target, the asteroid Vesta, visiting it in 2011 and 2012. And then after it gets done with Vesta, it is going to go off to the asteroid, which is now called a dwarf planet, Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, Ceres, the same kind of a classification now as Pluto. So Ceres used to be an asteroid and got upgraded, and Pluto used to be a planet and got downgraded. And anyway, so it's off to Ceres in 2015. So this is a long mission, takes a lot of effort to get there. And of course, the satellite, the probe, Dawn, got its initial speed to escape Earth's gravity well, you know, by the Delta II rocket, and then it separates. Okay, so you've thrown it into space, and you've thrown it out of low Earth orbit, and it's on its way. Okay, at that point, it began firing. Soon after, it began firing its main engine on board. And where a lot of times you think of satellites or probes that are heading off to the other planets as having, you know, big giant chemical engines, rocket engines, or even sometimes even little solid rocket motors that give it another big boost of speed, and then it's done, okay, and it just coasts. Well, in this case, this has what's called an ion thruster. Very, very modern, very futuristic, a very neat propulsion system that was first flown on a NASA probe called Deep Space One, and this is on the spacecraft Dawn. And so what this is this thruster fires, and it's just got a very low thrust to it. It's almost like a gentle breeze. But in space, as you keep accelerating, and there's nothing to push back, you're in the vacuum, you just keep accelerating and accelerating and accelerating. You don't stop. As long as that thruster is firing, you keep speeding up. And so the longer you can fire that thruster, the faster you can go. Now, again, that's different from a big cannonball-like, explosion-like, you know, launch from the Cape, where you have all this rocket energy and you just throw it and let it go, and then it just coasts for the rest of the way. In this case, this satellite got thrown into orbit. At that point, you can call its relative speed zero, and then the rocket, the ion thruster fires and starts accelerating it on its way. The neat thing, the record, what made the news was that on last Saturday, on June 5th, Dawn hit the speed mark of 9,600 miles an hour, which broke the speed boost record of NASA's Deep Space One. And this is incredible for the technology that is being used. And I know it's hard to get your arms around it, and it's hard to what we're talking about, but when you're talking about just basically like a little candle firing against this spacecraft just nonstop. And what it is it uses a xenon gas and then electricity to speed up the molecules of the gas and turn it into a plasma and then release that. And then in the releasing of that plasma gives you the reaction that allows the spacecraft to accelerate. And so, again, last week it hits 9,600 miles an hour and breaks the speed record. And you're talking about within 4 days, I guess the other gee whiz number is that over 4 days it can go from 0 to 60 miles an hour with only 37 ounces of propellant. And over the course of the year, it can go 5,500 miles with about 16 gallons of fuel. It's got lots of fuel left, and that speed is just going to keep increasing and increasing as it goes to do its flyby mission. So very neat thing, very neat technology on the Dawn spacecraft, that engine constantly firing for weeks and months at a time and rapidly accelerating it. And there's all sorts of applications for interplanetary travel with that. So, okay, that said, what's the other part of the Dawn segment? Well, let's talk about Dawn, my wife, for a second. Next week, we're going to be celebrating, believe it or not, the one-year anniversary of Space Talk. And in honor of the anniversary and to say thanks to my wife for putting up with what has become our new Saturday routine for our family, I'm going to grant her wish that I change the Space Talk theme song. When we started Space Talk a year ago, I wanted this theme to be the opening, which is Telstar. Aaron, if you could just give a quick couple of bars, maybe. You know, I wanted this song because this song just says to me Cape Canaveral in the 60s and the 50s. And, of course, that's where this song came from, the name for the Telstar spacecraft. Well, we're going to come up with a new theme song. And I'm going to be taking nominations from you, the audience, if you want, by email, spacetalking@AOL.com, over the next few days. I'm not going to do anything with Star Trek, Star Wars, or 2001, nothing too cliche like that. But we're going to come up with some neat, neat options, and I'm going to present them to you next week on our show. And my special panel that I'm going to have in the studio, we're going to help select the new theme song. And in the studio to do that, I'm going to bring in three of my college buddies from Embry-Riddle. You know all of them in one way or the other. We all worked together on the Avion newspaper back at Embry-Riddle when we were students. Wes Olszewski, who does Clyde Morris and Dr. Zuch rockets, we've had on before. Pat McCarthy, longtime space modeler and who works over at Space Florida. And Brian Mosdell, who is site director for SpaceX. The four of us college buddies are going to come together, share some space stories with you, share some thoughts about where we are and where we're going in space. And not all of us agree with each other about what we're doing. So you're not going to want to miss that next week's show, because I guarantee you, especially with my good friend Wes Olszewski, the chances of anything happening are pretty pretty high. So don't miss it. Again, next week, the one-year anniversary show of Space Talk here on WMMB, 2 o'clock next Saturday. So I guess that's it for today, talking about next week. And I do want to thank you all for listening today. Space Talk is sponsored by United Space Alliance and is a production of Myla Solutions. Aaron Michaels, as I said, is our personal chief engineer. I'm Jim Banky, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Now, don't go anywhere. As always, the Home Mortgage Law Show is next, followed at 4 o'clock by Dan Connery, right here on WMMB. And we'll see you next week. Take care, everybody.